This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the Sports Edge with Rick Wolf on your flagship station for New York sports. The Fan, Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM, WFAN New York.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I'm your host, Rick Wolf. Well, I have two items on the docket this morning, and later on the hour, if we have time, I want to ask you this. What do you do as a sports parent or as a coach when your athlete gets nervous at a clutch moment in a game, or he or she just gets nervous or anxious before a game? Do you just tell them to pause and to take a few deep breaths? Well, a lot of parents and coaches say exactly that. Take your time, slow down, and take some deep breaths. But does that really work? Well, we'll discuss that later on in the show. But first up, there was a new study just published this past week by the American Psychological Association. And in short, what this study concludes is what many of us have assumed for a long time, that helicopter parents actually get in the way of their kids' emotional and social development. Now, I don't think this will come as any surprise, but this study strongly suggests that parents who hover too much over their kids, well, it's not good for one's psychological development. And let me quote a conclusion from this study. And again, this comes from the American Psychological Association. Quote, our research showed that children with helicopter parents may be less able to deal with the challenging demands of growing up, especially with navigating the complex school environment. This comes from Nicole Perry, PhD from the University of Minnesota and the lead author of the study. She goes on to say, children who cannot regulate their emotions and behavior effectively are more likely to act out in the classroom, to have a harder time making friends, and to struggle in school, end quote. Now, this study looked at 422 children over 8 years' time, kids between the ages of 2 to the age 10, and the kids were from all sorts of different economic backgrounds and were predominantly either white or African-American. Basically, it was observed that as these kids were given a chance to play and to interact with toys or other such challenges and so on, those parents who observed and then interfered or decided to instruct their kids and in effect really didn't give their children much breathing room to play and explore on their own, well, they ended up with kids who didn't behave well in school and had emotional and social issues. In other words, in short, the irony of this is that those parents who pretty much hover over their children in order to improve and to enhance their kids' achievements actually end up doing more damage than one would assume. It's actually better to let your kids have some space in order to let them experiment and to find their way and to develop a sense of confidence with their social skills on their own. Now, obviously, from a sports parenting perspective, this study is right on target. And by the way, I'm interested to get your thoughts about this. And of course, our toll-free line is 1-877-337-6666. That is brought to you by Mohegan Sun. Unlimited possibilities await you at Mohegan Sun. You can plan your stay at MohiganSun.com. And for example, how many times have coaches, you know, over the years suggested that if an athlete has an issue, well, it's much preferred if the youngster and not the parents approach the coach. Or if the kid feels that he or she is being somehow shortchanged, again, it's much better if the youngster learns how to approach the adult coach rather than having their mom or dad get involved. And in the end, if we want our kids and our athletes to develop a sense of real self-confidence and to mature, learning how to interact and handle difficult or complex situations on their own is key. It's absolutely key. And yet, we've now evolved, as you know, to a situation where helicopter parents are everywhere. I mean, that term, for example, helicopter parents, that didn't exist a generation ago. But now it's all part of the everyday fabric of being a sports parent. And this study, as I said, just sort of crystallizes what we probably already know. But again, now that the American Psychological Association has said, yeah, this being a helicopter parent, we understand you want to do the right things for your children. You have their best interest at heart. But the fact is, when you get so involved and deal and basically micromanage your kids, particularly when it comes to sports, you're going to make your kids kind of goofy in the long run. Simple as that. Okay, 1-877-337-6666. Let me get your comments. Let's go to our friend Ed over in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Hey, Ed, good morning. You're on the fan.
Good morning, Rick. How you doing?
Good. How are you, Ed?
Well, it's very simple. Like I'm going to give you a couple scenarios. I coach travel baseball.
Yep.
And I tell my parents, you do not talk to me about your son's playing time or any of that stuff. If he wants to talk, if he wants to know why, come and talk to me. You can listen, but you're not going to ask any questions.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I do it. And then you know what? This way you keep the parents out of it. But you know what I see more and more, Rick? I've been up in some now that we're in tournaments in Little League in Cal Ripken now in the districts and all that.
Right.
How many parents walk up to the dugout after their son's at bat and are correcting them? It's amazing. And what's crazy is the coaches of these Little League teams let the parents do it. They don't control the parents.
You mean the parent? Let me just get this right. You're seeing as an umpire that after a kid goes to the plate and has his at bat, the parent then goes to the dugout and talks to their child?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to use the term. It looks like the inmates are running the asylum.
Well, that's
Rick, I'm sure your father, God rest his soul, my father, God rest his soul, they were just happy to watch us play. And if they wanted to talk about it, we would discuss it maybe at home after the game and all that stuff. I was laughing the other day me and my partner, we were just like, do you believe this? They just walk over to the dugout and are trying to correct their sons.
It's hard to believe that it's sort of devolved to this point, Ed. I mean, again, a generation ago, our parents, you know, maybe they'd come out to watch a game occasionally, but there was nothing like that. Most of the time, the kids just went off. We played on our own. Parents were doing their own thing. But now, this just sounds like it's just getting so extreme. As you said, the parents are visiting with the kid after every at-bat in the dugout. That's exactly what we're talking about. I don't know how a youngster, can cope with a situation like that. That's so difficult.
Well, you know what it comes down to, Rick? Yes, we have coaches that are volunteers or fathers, whatever. But they don't know how to keep the parents away. It's that simple, you know. And it's almost like they're going up to the doctor and get as if saying, your coach don't know nothing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Instead of let the coaches coach. You know, you're a parent, root your team on. You know,
I just don't understand why the parents I do understand their sense of wanting to be involved and to help get their kids to the next level. I mean, I imagine most of these parents are talking to the youngsters in the dugout, you know, after a poor at bat, after a strikeout or a pop-up or something like that.
That's when it is, yes.
But
that's when it is.
They're not talking to the kid after he hits a home run, but it's when
No, they're in the stands dancing like they're Charo on a, dancing. You know what I mean? I swear to God, it's hilarious. I love umping Little League or Cal Ripken. But watching these parents, you got to laugh sometimes.
And as always, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Have a great day, Rick.
Thank you. You know, what Ed, again, he's seen this as an umpire. He says, the parents just go down and talk to the kids after every at bat. Now, I understand that if you are really living vicariously through your kid and you think you're spending a lot of money on your kid getting them private coaching or tutoring I understand there's a temptation to go down and talk to a youngster after every at-bat and say, okay, what did you do wrong? How can we improve the next time? But that's not the right venue. You just don't do that. Again, this is exactly what we're talking about here in terms of helicopter parents. I mean, the fact is, you want to give that child a chance to sort of, okay, let me absorb what I did wrong on that particular plate appearance, and what do I need to do to improve upon that? Let me figure it out. Don't let mom or dad come down and try to basically analyzes for me. If a kid doesn't get to the ability to learn how to make the adjustments on his own, he's never going to learn how to do it or have the self-confidence to go out and try to make those kind of changes. It's like almost equivalent to having a father or a mother in a test in school watching over their kid's shoulder. The kid gets something wrong on the paper, the parent just steps in and says, okay, let me show you what you did wrong on that particular question. Can't do that. Kids need the space to make mistakes, but they also want the freedom to learn how to adjust so they can get a sense of self-confidence. I mean, to me, this is where the helicopter parents sort of lose sight of what's important here. As I said before, the study says if you get parents who are too involved, then lo and behold, the kids aren't going to learn how to make mistakes and how to correct them on their own. They're not going to be able to mature because they're always going to have mom and dad to fall back on. And that's not a positive kind of development. It's as simple as that. In fact, I want to revisit this in a few minutes after the update, but I want to talk about this other term we talked a few weeks ago about lawnmower parents and also about entitlement. I mean, I think these concepts all sort of, you know, stem from this concept of helicopter parents, parents who are lawnmowers, obviously parents who feel they're entitled. Obviously, for a parent to come down to a dugout during the course of a game, even if it's a little league game, I mean, that you're entitled to do that? I mean, how does that work? Where's the coach in all this? It just doesn't seem to add up, and again, it seems to be going in the wrong direction. And by the way, I gather it's not just happening, obviously, with Little League Baseball. It's happening probably with all sports at the youth level.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
We're talking about helicopter parents this morning, and as I mentioned before the break, there are new species of helicopter parents now. Remember a few weeks ago I was talking on a show where a coach from upstate New York had sued some parents who basically had put out some defamatory comments about the coach, led to him losing his job. That coach now says, well, we're beyond helicopter parents now. We're now to lawnmower parents, parents who just basically cut everything in their way. They just, you know, like a lawnmower, just mow everybody down. They don't care who gets hurt along the process. And, of course, this is all part of the sense today of parents, a sense of entitlement, that somehow they're entitled to interfere or meddle with their kids' development. Again, they don't seem to care that much about if there are coaches involved or other people who are in the process. It's all very disturbing, and this trend seems to be snowballing rather than getting better. And I'm taking your calls at 1-877-337-6666. Let's go to Megan up in Shelton, Connecticut. Megan, good morning. You're on the fan.
Hey, good morning. I just want to thank you so much. You always have such great shows on.
Oh, thank you,
Megan.
And
I'm an avid listener, believe me, a long time.
Well, thank you. That's very nice to hear.
Well, yeah, well, believe me, we appreciate you very much.
Good, thank you.
So, this is my concern. We can sit around and create chat about these parents, and it's very unfortunate in this day and age that people have gone down that slippery slope,
mm-hmm.
because as a parent, old school, I have to say I'm an old school parent, you know, this did not happen, and we all know that. So what I'm asking of you and the other sportscasters is use the power of the word, and let's start looking at solutions. Let's start putting together like an advisory board, and let's set some standards so that the volunteer that is over their head, because these parents can be a real tough cookie,
mm-hmm.
have a real standard that this is the rule, this is how it's going to be. If you step over that, I hate to say it, but your child is out.
Well, I'll tell you, Megan, and I agree with you that, in fact, I was just thinking as you were talking, you know, 15, 20 years ago when I first started to do this show, around the country, a lot of communities started to put together these mandatory training programs for parents that said,
correct.
If your kid's going to play in our program, you as the mom or dad must go and attend these training sessions on how to behave during the course of practices and games. And if you don't go, then your kid won't be on the team. And, you know, only when that sort of stipulation was put forth saying, you understand how serious this is, you must go and be certified or go through our training, otherwise your kid's not going to play on the team, then parents paid attention. But since that happened 15, 20 years ago, for some reason, Megan, those programs seems to have fallen out of favor. I don't know why. Now, the second thing along the same lines, you mentioned about, well, if you misbehave as a mom or dad, your kid is going to be banished. That's tough because you know, again, it's all part of that same package, but I've always had some difficulties about the fact that you're going to punish the child. As we know, the kid can't choose their parents. So I
right.
always feel that, well, you tell the mom or dad, here's how it's going to work out. If you misbehave, we have a zero tolerance program here. If you misbehave, your kid can still play, but you can't come to any more games or any more practices. You're just gone for the year.
It'll never work. Well, it'll never work. They'll sue the pants off everybody because it's entitlement.
We're talking
about entitlement.
I know that, but I do feel at some point, if it does get to the point where a lawsuit is filed and the parents have to acknowledge that we were told in the preseason not to interfere and to behave, I think the parents are going to lose and they're going to realize, well, I guess this is a good law. But it hasn't happened yet, and I think the other, quite frankly...
May I interject?
Of course,
No, I think you need tough love, for real. I think, unfortunately, many, many things are dissolved because everyone's trying to be so nice. And well, this isn't about nice. The child's already lost by having a parent like that.
Here's the other thing, too, Megan, and this is where you get into this, and that is we're not talking about people who don't know each other. We're talking about communities. We're talking about people who are friends, neighbors, people who live in the same area you live. Very difficult to go to somebody and say, you know, we're going to ban you and your kid from playing this year in the soccer program or in the baseball team because the parent can't control themselves. That's a very harsh kind of approach, particularly because you're going to interact with those people in the years to come.
How about psychiatrists in the dugout?
Sure. But I don't know if it's psychiatrists so much as you need basically to have over the years we've heard this. I mean, Little League fields have been designed purposely where the backstop is like 5 or 6 feet higher off the ground in the back, so the parents can't go to the back of the backstop to yell at the umpires or yell at their kids. I mean, we've made these measures, and yet it still happens, and it gets worse. So, Megan, the fact that we're at least talking about this, I do think that has some positive impact in the sense that people was trying to spread the word that this has to stop. And I do believe, to your point, that the more we can get preventive measures in place and really maybe go back to the day of having parents trained to understand how they have to behave at their kids' games or else their kids can't play in the team, that may be something worth considering. Anyhow, let me take some more calls.
Use your power and get it done.
I'll do the best I can.
All right.
Thanks,
Thank
Megan.
You.
Take care.
Bye.
That's Megan is obviously right about this. We have to start getting serious to sort of corral and to prevent this behavior, which all comes from well-meaning parents. We get that. Let's move on. Let's go to our friend Jack over in Fairlawn, New Jersey. Jack, good morning.
Rick, good morning. How are you?
Good, Jack. Now, you coached a long time, so this has to be an issue you know a lot about.
Well, let's get to the second topic real quick, okay?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And this is my advice to everybody that's listening. For when your child gets up in that situation when they're very, nervous or they're nervous before a game, one thing I suggest, and you're going to probably kill me for saying this, but maybe not, they should read your book. They really should. I mean, I'm telling you, I've already bought your book as gifts for people. So, you know what? I've read over 100 books on the psychology of sport, and you name it, and written by every single type of athlete and psychologist you can think of. And the one that I actually love, I mean, the Mental Game of Baseball by your mentor,
Harvey Dorfman, sure,
was my Bible. And your book recently became my Bible. So, because it's in layman's terms, it's for every parent, every athlete, every coach to read. Teachers should read it because you can apply this stuff in the classroom. I've been a teacher. I'm getting ready to retire. I've been a teacher for 42 years now. And it's the best. The second, the first topic, I'm going to tell you, I had a parent, real quick story, and then I'll get off.
Yeah.
I was coaching at the high school level, varsity level. We had a great team. We were 13-0. We're playing a team that's 16-0. And I caught and the two types of parents, the helicopter and the lawnmower, I had in one parent. So this person was giving his daughter, she was my pitcher, he was giving this daughter signals from the stands. And I caught this about in the third inning. And at the time, we were winning 2-1, and we were both undefeated, both in first place, tied for first place. And I walked out on the mound, and I talked to my athlete. I said, I know what's going on. If it continues to happen, you're coming out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So about an inning later, I give the signal to my catcher, you know, and I had my catcher usually call games, but this is an important game, and I had my second string catcher in. So I'm giving her the signals, and I see my pitcher look, shake it off, look up into the stands. I call timeout. I walk out, and I pull a girl out of the game.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. Now, we're winning 2-1, and we're both undefeated. And before I had the girl back on the bench, the father was at the bench yelling and screaming at me. I told him, this is not the time. Leave me alone. We'll talk about it later.
Right.
Well, this person challenged me actually to a physical fight. All right. He also went to the athletic director and went after me, and the athletic director caught his ear, and I lost my job at the end of the year. And, you know, these parents, I'm a teacher of 42 years, like I said, Rick, and I have a program, a curriculum, and a week before each curriculum, like when I go from hockey to basketball, I have a week of free play. I let the kids choose their games. I let them have free play. I let them interact with themselves. I let them get away from that structure that they get at home every day. And I teach learning disabled kids. So it's even a tougher situation with the parents because they don't ever want their kids to fail. And I'm going to tell you something that I learned in your book and Harvey's book, okay?
Yeah.
That failure is the most important tool in success. All right. You need to learn from your failures. You need to understand that we are going to make mistakes in our life. The parents have to allow their kids to make mistakes, because without mistakes, there's no learning. It's all structured. It's all expected. So,
Jack,
you know, and I'm going to tell you, your book, I'm being serious now. I'm not just fooling around. Your book was one of the best things I've ever read.
Well, Jack, first of all, people are going to think you're my publicist.
No, well, don't worry about it. If you want me to be, I will.
But thank you for the wonderful sentiments about my book. Number two, just to tie this all together, this study out of the American Psychological Association saying that helicopter parents are doing more damage than good.
They're doing more damage than you can imagine.
That's exactly what we're talking about here. Kids have to fail many times before they can learn a sense of self-confidence because they learn how to do it themselves. But if mom and dad are always there, you know, basically saying, no, do it this way, do it this way, you're doing the kids a disservice. And the last thing I will say to you, and Jack, I got to let you go because I'm going to get a break here.
I just want to say one more thing, Rick.
Yeah.
One more thing. Kids have to understand that they go out to please mommy and to please their coaches. They'll never please anybody unless they please themselves.
Of course. Jack, thank you as always.
You're welcome.
You know, at the Jack's other point about when he was coaching the softball team in high school, I mean, yeah, I mean, a parent is basically overriding his instructions to the kid on the mound during the course of an important game. And so he tells the kid, you know, if this continues to happen, I'm taking you out of the game. And, of course, the dad comes down and starts yelling and screaming and ultimately complains to the AD. But I think all of us would say the same thing. A parent can't override the coach's instructions during the course of a game. That's what the coach is there for. If we don't let the coach have the freedom to get the job done, then we're going to have total chaos. And this is one reason, obviously, and Jack, I'm sure, would tell you the same thing, why we have so many high school coaches saying, enough, I'm leaving.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
And I also, following up on Jack's wonderful endorsement of my book, it is entitled Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed. It's available pretty much everywhere, including Amazon and BNN.com. Again, Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed. Please be sure to check out my website at AskCoachWolf.com, where you can put in your own thoughts, questions as well. If you want to hear a podcast of the show, you just go to WFAN.com and find the link for podcast. And before I get back to the calls, I just want to give a quick, well-deserved shout-out to Caitlin Tuohy of North Rockland High School, who last week set the national record for high school girls in the mile. a most impressive accomplishment. Caitlin, who was just finishing her sophomore year at North Rockland High, she ran the mile in 4:33.87. She's also, not surprisingly, one of the top cross-country runners around as well. I can only imagine what she'll do as she enters into her junior and senior year. Really quite impressive. So congratulations to Caitlin. Okay, back to our conversation this morning at 1-877-337-6666. We're talking about helicopter parents, and they have to be stopped. Let's go to our friend Mike out in East Rockaway. Hey, Mike, you're on the fan.
Hey, good morning, Rick.
How are you?
You know, good. I always make it a point, as you know, Rick, 15 years tuned into your show. And
amazing.
Amazing. My dad would have been 90 this year. It passed 2 years ago. I said, Dad, you have to tune into Rick. And, you know, where do we start? Helicopter, lawnmower, I'm laughing about this. And I call some of them high voltage parents. You can't make it up. Rick, it's, you know, I read your book, Harvard Boys. I got to read the new book, Secrets of Sports Psychology Revealed, because
right.
I can tell you stories here that I'll make it quick. You know, some parents are frustrated ball players and living vicariously through, but things have to change. And I think it's a great idea what you said before, Rick. You know, if something is happening with the child and the coach, you know, especially when they get to a certain age, maybe their ball player can speak to the coach. Or some coaches I know don't even speak to the parents, just on emails.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. I was coaching with two guys, four ball, 13-year-old, first year on the big diamond, I tell parents. And one guy was hovering near the dugout. And, you know, and he kept saying, I want my son to play third. I said, excuse me. Your son needs work in every phase of the game. He's not playing third. He's going to catch a line drive with his chin.
Yep.
And I said, that was one of your pet peeves, Rick, on one of your shows.
Mm-hmm.
Around the dugout. I said, my friend, why don't you sit in the stands? I think we can handle it. And he almost got out of control. And that's one of many stories. But parents have to realize, hey, it's just a sport, but they're getting more out of control as the years go by. And in closing, Rick, last week's guest played for a longtime Mets fan, 10 years in the majors, took over New York Tech, and mentioned Hirsch.
Mm-hmm.
My old coach, we've spoken about things. I believe tomorrow he's starting his 43rd or 44th year with his baseball camp. But you can't make this stuff up on every level. Little League, middle school, varsity, college. It's so bizarre that truth is stranger than fiction.
Mike, it's exactly right. It is stranger than fiction. It's hard to believe,
yep.
And yet that's where we are these days. It's as simple as that. Mike, thanks. So let me move on. Thank you for the call.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks a lot.
You bet. And you know, to Mike's point, and we heard this before, these terms, helicopter parents, lawnmower parents, parents with a sense of entitlement about their kids playing sports. These are concepts or terms that didn't exist 20 years ago. It's almost as though the parents today are so fearful that if their kid struggles or things don't go their kid's way or whatever, that the parents are afraid of their youngster experiencing a sense of adversity. And you know, as one of the callers said earlier, adversity is not a bad thing. If anything, it's a great teacher. It's a great motivator. It's a great instructor because it forces the youngster to look themselves in the mirror and say, I have to do this better if I want to continue to progress with my sports. So, again, don't be afraid of adversity. Let's move on. Let's go to Dennis in Jacksonville, Florida. Dennis, good morning. You're on the fan.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Thanks for having me. Great topic as usual.
Thank you.
My background, I've been in youth sports for 25 years, and the last 12 years as a athletic director in a private middle school here in Jacksonville. So talk about, you know, the sense of entitlement that goes along with these helicopter parents and these kids. I think it's how you create your culture as a leader of a program.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple things that I do, I have mandatory parent meetings. If your child makes a team, they have to be at a meeting. And quite frankly, we go over several things, and it isn't brought up already for some other coaches who talked before. You're not allowed to talk to coaches or myself. I have a 24-hour policy after any practice or game. So therefore, it eliminates the hot-headed confrontations when things happen.
Right.
I make them sleep on it.
Yep.
If they still feel the same way in 24 hours, they have to email me.
Mm-hmm.
And I set up an appointment and we talk about it with the child there. The other thing is I do not let the parents talk to the coaches or myself about playing time. They have to speak to the coaches because the reason why they're not playing, the coaches fully well know how, why they're not playing. And really the last thing, and I'm dealing with kids in fifth grade all the way through eighth grade, and I've been doing this, like I said, for 12 years, and I rarely have problems because I lay it on the line out front, and I tell them this is not for everybody, and if you can't handle this, then maybe this sports program isn't for you and your child.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we talk about entitlement, and to one last point, what's ruined sports, not just here in Florida, but probably in America, are these travel teams. Because I have kids who can't make my school team, but the parents will tell me, but he's on his travel team. And I laugh because it's just a money grab. That's all that is. There's 10 travel teams for every level, and everyone's on a travel team. So, you know, the way the message is delivered, and my track record's pretty strong down here.
Right.
Because I think you need to lay it out in front of people. And then when it comes back, I say, you were at the meeting. We talked about this, and we're not going to rewrite history, and we don't.
Well, Dennis, I gotta say, I think that is so important because I do think that a lot of coaches, a lot of athletic directors do have the preseason meetings. That's become pretty routine. But to your point, it sounds like you're pretty emphatic. So when you get the parents of the kids there in that preseason get-together and you say, look, I'm not kidding around. These are the rules. If your kid's going to play on this team, you as the parent have to abide by these rules, and there's no give or take on this. It's all zero tolerance. Once you make that so emphatically well-known, parents got to pay attention. So as you said, if something comes up during the course of the season, you go back and say to the parent, do you remember the meeting we had back in, you know, a few months ago?
I mean, right.
They had no answer for that.
Well, and our stuff is black and white. I don't leave any areas open to interpretation. And I make my players and my parents sign the agreement,
right,
in terms of behavior. And it's very simple. It goes back to when you and I played. The players play, the coaches coach, and the referees ref.
Yep.
I will never hold it against a child if a parent is a lunatic. But I will tell you, that parent won't be allowed back in a gym or in a field if that behavior continues. So,
as you know, people have heard my show, they know that I'm a big believer in zero tolerance. Not because I'm not being compassionate, I just feel that too many parents now don't think the rules apply to them. They apply to the other family, not to me.
Right.
Because my kid isn't, my kid's special, my kid's entitled, whatever the reason they feel. But they don't seem to think that applies to them. So you have to say, look, if you didn't understand the rules, you signed the contract, and the fact is you crossed the line, you are gone. You are gone not just for a game, but for the rest of the season. We don't want to see you at any games or any practices. End of story. And you have to put some teeth into that. Simple as that.
And because I'm a private school, I face the entitlement because people pay to send their children to our school. But I have the utmost backing of my administration, and I've told my principal, if you tell me we have to play someone, keep somebody, or any kind of politics, I will resign as AD, and you can be it yourself.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not doing it.
I think that's the, unfortunately, that's the position we are now with our coaches and ADs. Because you got to make sure that the administration has your back and is there to support you in every way you need. Hey, Dennis, thank you for this.
You got it, Rick.
Very good call.
Thank you all you did for youth sports, Rick.
Thank you, Dennis.
Appreciate
that.
Bye-bye.
You know, and I think Dennis did a nice job there of summarizing exactly what we have to do. We have to sort of basically support ourselves as coaches, as athletic directors, and say, look, we got to lay down the law. So there's absolutely no misunderstanding with the parents because they aren't getting this. As I said before, they don't think the rules apply to them. They apply to all the other parents, and that's the problem. It has to be universal, and there has to have a zero-tolerance kind of approach in terms of the discipline so that, you know, eventually the word begins to get out and the parents understand they're not kidding around. Well, unfortunately, I've run out of time this morning on this very important topic, and I wish I could get to all the callers who all have excellent points. But the fact remains that helicopter parents, as the study, as I referred to at the top of the hour, from the American Psychological Association, it's just the irony is that parents are trying to do well by their kids, but by intervening and interfering and meddling with the kids, they're actually setting the kids back, and that's not good. Remember, moms and dads, adversity is not necessarily a bad thing for your kid, particularly if they're an athlete, to go through. That's all part of the process of developing their sense of self-confidence and of mastering athletic skills. Keep that in mind. As far as all the things we can do to educate parents, we got to keep fighting the good fight. Let them know we really need to have a zero tolerance. After all, somebody has to be the grown-up at our kids' games. It might as well start with you. Okay, that's going to do it for me in this edition of the Sports Edge. My thanks this morning to Pete Kennedy. Please stick around for Ed Randall. He's up next. I'll see you next week right here on the Sports Edge.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.